is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, joined by Bill Raggio. He is Senior Fellow of Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleague Tom Johnson and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. Afghanistan, the headlines of the moment. From London, Afghan guard killed, Kabul airport firefight leaves at least one dead. From London, red line, we will not extend Afghanistan withdrawal, say the Taliban. Defense Secretary Ben Wallace of the UK says British evacuation now down to hours, not weeks. Headline, London, refugees, EU row as officials fear repeat of 2015 migrant crisis. Those are the headlines right now. Bill joins me because over these last weeks, Bill and Tom and our conversation each week have been watching the map that Bill started in 2014 that has been updated repeatedly over this last year. And watching that map, it was a puzzle to us each week as to what we were seeing compared to what we knew was coming from statements by CENTCOM, by the Kabul government, by the negotiations in Doha, by the general reporting worldwide about the situation in Afghanistan. Bill, I take us not all the way back to when we started the countdown, which was the April announcement by the president that he wanted withdrawal, not by May 1st, but by September 11th. Now we know it's August 31st. In conversation 5 weeks back, 7 weeks back and 5 weeks back, there was this in-between zone where the Taliban seemed to be advancing in outlying districts, raid into a district's headquarters, and then peel back out again during the day. And yet, I date the puzzlement to an item that we discussed in late June, June 28th, that Tom had filed just days before. Taliban's deputy emir issues guidance for governance in newly seized territory. This puzzled all of us, because why would you guide for newly seized territory if you were going to give it back after the fighting season? It seemed discordant with how the Taliban had been behaving for years. And in this particular case, the speaker, the deputy emir, was Sirajuddin Haqqani. Who are the Haqqanis? And who are they to tell the Taliban that you've got to get ready for civilian situation, not just military and jihadi situation? Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yes, and the Haqqanis, a very important part of this puzzle. The Sirajuddin's father, Jalaluddin Haqqani, was a famed Mujahideen commander who fought the Soviets, but became increasingly radicalized over the years. He helped bring Osama bin Laden into the country after it was ejected from the Sudan in 1996. Became part of the Taliban government, helped the Taliban take control of the country, and then the Haqqani network itself became an integral part of the Taliban over the years. His father, Jalaluddin, again, was a member of the Taliban's executive decision-making body, and Sirajuddin, himself rose to lead the Haqqani network in his father's stead as he got older, and he has risen to the rank of one of the Taliban's two deputy emirs. So when he comes out and issues the statement, and also he is especially designated global terrorist by the United States for his ties to Al-Qaeda, as are many of his brothers, sons, uncles, and other leaders within his movement. And in the most recent UN sanctions and monitoring team report, he was described as an Al-Qaeda leader. So if the Taliban's deputy emir is an Al-Qaeda leader himself, and it's designated as a as designated by the U.S. for its ties to Al-Qaeda, what does that make the Taliban? I'll leave that. Obviously, I'm sure there are listeners here could figure that one out on themselves. But why did he make this statement on June 28th? And it's a critical time. At that point in time, the Taliban doubled the number of districts, more than doubled the number of districts that it controlled over the previous years. The U.S. announced the withdrawal. The Taliban was conquering territory. And at this point, it wasn't just playing to make incremental gains. It was playing to win. It was hoping to take control of all of Afghanistan. Sirajuddin Haqqani, who was very forward thinking, he's the man responsible for the strategy to take over Afghanistan, the military strategy and the execution of it. He's arguably the most powerful, influential, most educated or smartest Taliban leader out there. And he was forward thinking. He knows what's coming at this point. He knows that it's going to switch from district control to control of cities and control of provinces. And that happened just about a month after he made this statement. And he was preparing the Taliban fighters, saying, you know, it's one thing to conquer, but now we have to govern. And this is what we need to do to move forward.
Right. I'll read the quote that's in the filing. Late June 2021. Haqqani says, good governance is the need of the hour and must be taken into account by our colleagues. He cautions the Taliban's membership and officials that they shouldn't, quote, violate the rights of the people. They should, quote, in accordance with Sharia and consult with scholars embedded in the units, as they will carefully monitor the treasury and spoils. He's talking about ruling a civilian population, which is what we now hear about Kabul and other cities. They've got to keep the lights on. They've got to keep the water flowing, or not. And this is late June. So we go to the next filing that was significant. We have the July 4th weekend. That was 7 weeks out. Now we go to 5 weeks out. What is significant here, 5 weeks out, is that territory is now a major part of the Taliban offensive. And Bill is keeping a real-time map, but he cites at this point, early July, this is Dateline July 12th, as the U.S. completes its military withdrawal, the Taliban is advancing. Now we're back to the map. Bill, it's a real-time map, and I'm going to stop it because it flows. I'm going to stop it here in the beginning of July, July 7th. What we can see is that major cities like Kandahar are still in the control of the Afghan government at this time. But Herat is unknown. That's to the west, to Iran. It is the fall of Herat and the fall of Kandahar and several others, Mazar-e Sharif, that is the final blow. When you were looking at the map in early July, did you see something different than you'd seen in earlier fighting seasons in analyzing how the Taliban was advancing?
Yeah, by this point in July, I'm looking at July 10th here on my map. I'll just use that. So again, when all this began, when President Biden made the announcement, the Taliban controlled about 70 districts. There's 407 districts. Think of them as counties here in the United States, and contested about 210 or so. By this point in July, it flips. The Taliban control, this is July 10th, I'm using 216 districts, according to my calculations, and the contested almost halves, 118. So the Taliban controls more than half the country at this point. And instead of this being a fight for rural areas of Afghanistan, and that's what the Taliban started this as, a rural insurgency, and then it moved to this, it's rural insurgency to take the fight to the cities. And that's what started to begin in July. Capital Helmand, Lashkargah, Kandahar City, capital Kandahar, Herat City, Farah City, sorry pool. I could go on and on with the provincial capitals. This is not just in the south, but in the west and in the north. Many capitals, more than half of the capitals, were now surrounded, and the Taliban were launching probing attacks at this point. At this point, to me, it was very clear that the war was lost. It became obvious that unless the Afghan military did something dramatic, if it abandoned areas in the south and west and some areas in the east, if it didn't do this, consolidate its lines, start to retake areas in the north that they needed and in central Afghanistan, that it was going to lose this war. Or if something like the U.S. decided to change its withdrawal and intervene, but it would have taken a massive amount of U.S. force. We all knew this wasn't going to happen. President Biden has been quite clear about his disdain for staying in Afghanistan. So at this point, it was just a matter of tracking the fall of Rome at this point. The Afghan government, the Afghan military was losing on the battlefield, and it was a sad scene. So this is why, John, when I hear, Secretary of Defense Austin say, well, who could have foreseen that the government would have fallen in 11 days? And my response to him and any other general who makes a ignorant statement like this is that they weren't paying attention. And if they were paying attention, they were ignoring what was happening, or they were so incompetent that they didn't see what was happening right in front of their faces. It was clear to the casual Afghan watcher that at this point in time that it was falling apart, and that it was almost at an irreversible point. It would have taken a remarkable change of strategy to turn this thing around.
1 week later, it is now 4 weeks before the tragedy, which we date the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th of August. The filing that Bill and his colleague Andrew Tobin puts up, half of Afghanistan's provincial capitals under threat from Taliban. And the map looks entirely red because Bill is looking at what's under threat, not just what's fallen. And he writes, since the Taliban began his offensive under President Biden, announcing the withdrawal of forces on April 14th, the Taliban has more than tripled the number of districts controlled by the group from 73 to 221. So the momentum of the offensive is underway with 4 weeks to go. And yet still, Bill, we were hesitant. There's podcasts of each of these available on my site and on Bill's site at Long War Journal. I recommend his conversation with his colleague Tom Jocelyn, because they're talking to each other about what they're seeing on the map. We still were quietly cautious that CENTCOM could see this, that the State Department could see this offensive, that it wasn't going to peel back. But as I recall at the time, Bill, it was important to say no major provincial capitals had fallen. Remember that? There was a moment where we were told district capitals had fallen, not provincial capitals. Calling back your memory, you were very careful to cite this. Did you believe the provincial capitals could hold out with all the district capitals tumbling?
No, at that point in time, it was just a matter of time. That's why we wrote what we wrote on that day. Yeah, this is the really hard part of this job. Sometimes there's things you know, but you're taking a risk if you come out and make a overly bold projection. I really did know that it was a matter of weeks before one or more provincial capital began to fall. And then once one did fall, I knew that there would be a domino effect. And I think we all saw that. That's the 11 days that, Secretary Austin and others talk about. That was mere the closing act. But you always have to be careful because you don't know if there's always things that could happen. Someone, you know, again, the U.S. military could have decided President Biden could have said, I made a mistake here and we need to fix this. That was possible. It was possible that the Afghan government could have reorganized. These things were possible and some things were discussed. But given how I saw how CENTCOM and the Department of Defense and the State Department and the President and the administration was acting, I was pretty certain at this point that it was a lost effort. But, you know, what we say on the air, often we have to couch it a little bit.
Let's go to Kandahar when we come back, Bill, because the Taliban battle for Kandahar was a point of no return. We see now in retrospect. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The site to watch is Long War Journal. It's all laid out with the podcast linking. We're discussing what Bill and Tom and I would talk week by week. And next we go to Kandahar. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.